Air, even pressurized air. With the perfluorocarbon, every cell in their bodies becomes pressurized. In air, their body cells would be crushed. With an effort, Westfall took her eyes from the screen and turned to Archer.
That's rather inhuman, don't you think?
The scientist spread his hands in a gesture of helplessness. It's the only way we can get people down that deep. Lord knows we've searched for other possibilities, prayed for them even.
Arching a pencil-thin brow, Westfall said, "The Lord hasn't seen fit to answer your prayers."
"He works in mysterious ways," he replied softly.
"And you're determined to send people down there again, after all these years?"
"We've learned as much as we can with robotic probes. If we're going to make meaningful contact with the Leviathans..."
"Why is that so important?" she demanded.
Archer clearly looked surprised. "Why? Because they're an intelligent species."
"You can't honestly believe that those beasts are intelligent."
"Why not? Do you think God isn't big enough to create more than one intelligent species?"
"But you don't know it for certain. You're assuming it. There's no real evidence that they're intelligent."
A slow smile spread across Archer's bearded face. "You're perfectly right, Mrs. Westfall. I'm following a hunch. I have some reasons for my hunch, but they're mostly subjective."
"So?"
Still smiling, Archer said, "Mrs. Westfall, most people think that science is a strictly rational, unemotional business. All data and numbers. No human feelings at all. Well, that's dead wrong. Do you want to know how science really works?"
Westfall smiled back at him thinly. "Do tell."
"A scientist gets a hunch, an insight, an idea that he knows how something works. He might spend the rest of his life trying to prove that he's right. His best friends might spend the rest of their lives trying to prove that he's wrong. It doesn't matter in the long run. In the long run, what they uncover, the guy with the hunch and the others who disbelieve him, what they uncover is new facts, new observations, new measurements. Everybody learns. In the long run, it doesn't matter if the fellow's hunch was right or wrong. What matters is trying to prove it or disprove it. That's where the new understandings come from."
Westfall stared at him for a long, silent moment, then said, in a voice as sharp-edged as a stiletto, "And it doesn't matter how many people you kill along the way."
"It is uncomfortable at first," Dorn admitted, "but you adapt to it quickly enough." Deirdre shook her head. She had met Dorn for dinner, after spending more than an hour in Mrs. Westfall's suite, telling her everything that had transpired in their meeting with Dr. Archer, answering her pointed questions as well as she could. "They want me to go on the mission," Deirdre said. Dorn looked up from his cup of chilled soup. "You?" "Andy thinks I could make contact with the Leviathans," she said. Dorn said nothing. She couldn't tell from his utterly blank expression what he was thinking, but she thought he might be trying to control a sudden anger. Then she saw Corvus carrying a dinner tray toward them. "Here he comes now," she told Dorn. Corvus slid into the chair between the two of them and plunked his tray on the table. "Hi," Dorn rumbled. "Deirdre tells me that you want her to go with us in the submersible." "Right," Corvus nodded happily. "Dee's got the knack. She's the best one to try to make contact." "No," said Dorn. It sounded like a funeral bell tolling. Corvus's brows hiked up. "No, you will not risk Deirdre's life on this mission into the ocean." "Who made you mission commander?" Corvus replied, his face going serious. "You're going, aren't you?" "I'm certainly going. Why can't Dee go along with us?" "It's too dangerous." "Wait a minute," Deirdre interrupted. "I have something to say about this, you know." Dorn looked implacable. "It's too dangerous for you. But not for you. What happens to me doesn't matter. But you have your whole life ahead of you. Dorne, you're very sweet, Deirdre said, placing a hand on his human arm. But this is my decision to make, not yours.
Besides, Corvus added, it's not all that dangerous.
Uncomfortable? Yeah, breathing that liquid gunk. But Max says the mission shouldn't be really dangerous. His ship is perfectly safe, as long as we stay within its limits.
Dorne looked from Corvus's slightly unbalanced face to Deirdre's calm beauty, and then back to Corvus again.
Then please explain to me, he said very firmly, why Max is not here having dinner with us.
Mission Control Center. Linda Vishnevskaya had allowed Max Jaeger to sit at one of the consoles. It was better than having him hover over her, breathing down her neck. The control center was deserted except for the two of them. Nothing had been heard from Faraday since the unexpected data capsule had popped out of the clouds the day before. Another capsule was expected at noon this day. Jaeger sat impatiently at the console, reviewing all over again the data that the last capsule had carried. The shark's attacks had ended when Faraday backed away. The vessel was safe as long as it kept away from the predators. How far away? Jaeger asked himself. How close can she get before those damned monsters attack her again? They didn't do any damage, but if they keep battering at her, something's going to shake loose sooner or later. The sharks are looking for the leviathans, Jaeger understood. Those big whales are the sharks' food. So if we can just trail the sharks for a while, we ought to come up on the leviathans, sooner or later. Better be sooner. She's due to leave the ocean and fly back here in another 32 hours. Jaeger realized that Vishnevskaya was standing over him. He almost chuckled at the incongruity of their sizes. Standing, she was just about eye level with him while he was seated.
When is the last time you had a decent meal? She asked him.
Shrugging, I don't know. I grabbed a sandwich a little bit ago.
That was this morning. It's now almost dinner time.
I'm not hungry. She wrinkled her nose.
When's the last time you took a shower?
He frowned.
Max,
she said, resting a hip on the corner of the console's desktop.
It's no use sitting here hour after hour. You can't help your baby. She's doing fine down there.
She might pop another capsule. Vishnevskaya leaned across the console's keyboard and clicked its power switch. The screens went dark.
What are you... Max, little father, I am pulling rank on you. As director of flight operations, I order you to get the hell out of here.
Jaeger blinked at her. This tiny golden-haired pixie, standing with her fists planted on her slim hips, her violet eyes steady, unwavering.
You're ordering me? That's right. Leave the control center. Get yourself a decent meal. If anything happens, I will call you immediately.
You're ordering me. Max didn't know whether to laugh or scream at her.
Out! Now!
She pointed toward the doors. As Jaeger pushed himself up from the console's chair, she added,
And take a shower.
Faraday glided through the dark, turbulent sea, keeping as far from the pack of predators as it could, while still observing their position with its longest-ranged sensors. The predators were moving purposefully, steadily, in one direction, massed into a column. Central Computer's human analog program pulled up an image of an army of human soldiers marching along a barren, war-ravaged plain. They could go faster, the Central Computer concluded. In their attacks on Faraday itself, they had certainly showed much more speed, but now they were coasting along almost leisurely as they moved ever deeper into the hotter depths. The safety program showed that the vessel was approaching the design limit on depth, but so far the increasing pressure and external temperature had not caused any problems. So far. Suddenly, the sharks veered off to the left. Sensors showed that a huge formation of Leviathans was moving slowly out